Hello and welcome to the Cloud Solution Architect podcast, where we talk to Azure architects from across the globe and discuss interesting and creative Azure solutions. This is your host, Anand Kumar. I work as a Cloud Solution Architect for Microsoft in the New York City region. For more Cloud Solution Architect podcast episodes, animated Azure videos, and simplified how-to content articles on Azure, please check out www.azuremonk.com. That's www.azuremonk.com. In this episode, we talk with Kevin Mack, who works as a Cloud Solution Architect for Microsoft in the independent software vendor space. He talks about how his past life as a professor gave him valuable life skills like explaining and simplifying complex concepts for the audience, and also helped him sharpen his debugging skills. We also talk about how his wife made the greatest contribution to his blog and also helps him run the alpha beta test before delivering a session on a complex topic. We also talk about how designing for high availability is critical for the customers that he works with, and he goes about how he designs them. All this and more. Without further ado, let's get to the show. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Anand. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Hey, Kevin, so can you walk us through, how you got to where you are today, right? I know you've worked as an Azure Cloud Solution Architect, and you also work on a unique space as well. And I personally love your blog, Big Mac, is it called?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it was Big Mac Bites. Yeah, just rebranded. So, yeah, it's been interesting.
Yep. I love your blog. I mean, the content that you post. So walk us through, how you got to where you are today and your journey to Azure.
Yeah, sure. So, my journey to Azure really started. So it started a while back before I was ever at Microsoft. So I traditionally, it's funny, I went to school for business information technology, and the funny joke that my father still reminds me of to this day is that whenever I graduated from school, he asked me what I wanted to do, and I told him anything but programming. It's something he loves to remind me of regularly because that's not my life. And then from there, I really went to work in software development. I think what really sort of struck me about the industry and then led me to Azure was always finding a way to use technology to take something and make it better or make it more impactful or make it grow. So like first solution I ever built whenever I got a job as a programmer was I worked for the bar exam at the time and creating a process that took reconciling exams, because we'd have like 5,000 exams, and taking that process from like 3 days to like 2 hours, mm-hmm. and like doing that kind of thing. And then you move forward in a career, and I loved building software that would be impactful and really drive that type of solution or drive something that made people's lives better. Mm-hmm. And I think what took me to the cloud in that regard was it made it so much easier to do that and so much faster to do that. So gone are the days of, great, I want to build this solution. I need 5 servers. I'm going to wait a month for them to requisition them. And it's like, no. I'm just going to spin up what I need and get moving and leverage these cloud services that just make life easier and make it that I can get these impressive technologies and compute into these solutions to have those impacts. And I think that's what really drew me to the cloud. So what that ended up leading to was I ended up working for a company, and we got a contract to build a early learning education system for parents. So the idea was to build out a solution that was designed around getting information in the hands of new parents so that they could better do early childhood development. And at the time, I remember going into the company and being like, we shouldn't, they were used to on-prem work, and saying, no, let's treat this as our first cloud opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it was exciting because I was really like cutting my teeth on something that was brand new for that company. And it was really successful. So it was definitely an interesting experience. And then flash forward from there, ended up working at Microsoft, where now I work a lot with, I'm part of our state and local government team, but I work with ISV solutions. So software vendors that support state and local government, and getting to work on solutions that are built to solve these bigger problems that software companies are able to jump in and help state and local government with is really exciting for me. So that's sort of how I got there.
Awesome. It's actually amazing. You know, a lot of people and everybody, the first time, you know, the cloud, you know, the agility with which they can spin up resources and get projects implemented. That's the first love, if you may, right, for the cloud and to get enticed into clouds. And that's been a common theme for a lot of the cloud solution architects that I've spoken with. That's amazing. So you did also mention, right, Kevin, so you bought up, you bought down a process which used to take a couple of days down to a few hours. So that's creating an impact right there. It's a real world impact.
Yeah.
So in that note, right, do you have a particular solution that you worked on or you're particularly proud about, you know, using Azure solutions?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And yeah, there's really a couple that come to mind. Obviously going to redact company names and stuff here, but really there was a company that I was working with that one of their big solutions was built around doing indexing and searching and really getting that data into the cloud. And I think what was exciting about that opportunity was you were looking at a similar to that solution of reconciling exams, like, but that much more complicated of they had this great process for pulling data out of all these disparate systems. But the problem we had to tackle and we had to solve was how do you do that and accelerate it so that you could process this massive amount of backlog of data really, really quickly. So you have a scenario where a customer has, you know, triple digit number of terabytes on premise of data that they need to have indexed and pulled in to the cloud. And how do you build a solution around that will scale up to meet that demand and pull that data in as quickly as possible? Mm-hmm. And what made that solution so interesting was you really had to take and break down, and we had to look at really tightly metrics and monitoring and really get a sense of optimizing how every piece of compute that we were using and how you would create the metrics around being able to scale up appropriately so you could do it in a cost-effective manner, right? Because what I've said to customers before is you can do anything in the cloud. It's just a question of like spend and time, right? So the end of the day was trying to figure out and build that optimized solution that let them hit their goals of ingesting and indexing data while still getting everything done. And the great part about my job too on this was got to work with some really amazing software developers on this customer side, mm-hmm. and really getting to see through a different lens how they see the world. Because my background traditionally before this was always like your traditional app development and seeing sort of technologies that prior to this I'd never heard of before. Like I'd never heard of, you know, things like Lucene, or I'd heard of things like Elasticsearch and I'd touched it before, or Cassandra, but I'd never really dug in on it. Mm-hmm. And it was this opportunity to not just do something cool and impactful, but also like sort of flex a different muscle and learn something new that I'd never seen before. And so that was one of the big ones. The other big one I would always look at or recently look at was, you know, being that I work with ISV solutions, and this is pretty much true across the board. I mean, these software vendors, I mean, they live and die by their solution, right? So when one of the big things that you really learn very quickly is important to a lot of them is high availability. You know, how do I leverage the cloud in a way to make sure that my system is always available? Mm-hmm. And not only that, but how do I do it for a solution that could potentially be multi-tenant? You know, because I, you know, it's for some of these companies, it's not a matter of, oh, a server went down. That means one customer isn't able to access their data for 5 minutes. It's not, for some ISVs, it could be a case of, no, that service goes down. None of our customers are accessing data. So how do we make sure that we prevent that? And it's a different kind of challenge to sort of orient yourself to think in those terms, because you really have to start thinking about what could go wrong in SLAs and composite SLAs and what does that mean and how do you do that kind of fault tolerance to allow a solution to really thrive in the cloud that way.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. I think, especially when it comes to Azure, right? Like you said, when you're designing for solutions which requires high availability, and especially in your case, where a single service goes down, meaning that the whole, all your customers, like every customer that the ISV serve, essentially is going to face a downtime, right? So, you mentioned that you have a challenge of designing a solution, you know, sort of keeping in mind every SLA for every single service as well, because if like you mentioned, the composite SLA is what really boils down to at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
But let's say you designed the solution, right? Do you have a mechanism to test, Netflix as Chaos Monkey to make sure that, you know, there's no downtime? Do you inject fault into the system every now and then to test the high availability, or what would be your strategy in these kind of, requests from the customer?
Yeah, so that's a fantastic question. And yeah, so it really comes down to you need to be able to do that and you need to be able to test it. So at the end of the day, no SLA is going to mean anything unless you can actually stand behind it. And so what we see with a lot of customers is it means a lot of load testing their applications and injecting that kind of tolerance or fault tolerance. So, you know, anybody will say, yeah, no, my code can survive a fault. But the question is, yeah, but what if I took the database offline right now? Let's do a test where we actually break something, you know, or we actually go in and test something. And the great one, and you called it out, is the ultimate is to have a chaos monkey in your environment and sort of testing all that. And that's something I've worked with some partners on before and some other customers, but it's also one of those solutions. It's kind of ironic because everybody says, oh, well, it can't be that hard to just sort of start for to use the illustration to sort of swing the hammer around and just break something. But it's actually very hard to do. Like, it requires a lot of planning because you need to, what we find is it's not just also a question of, okay, we found a problem, how do we fix it? But there's also this other question of how do you monitor for it? Like, how does that visualize, you know, because just because a customer gets a, hey, an error occurred type message doesn't give any visibility into where in the stack this chased down. And when you start to add things in there like Kubernetes and microservices and all these things you start to layer in, one of the things I find that's the most challenging and that most of my customers really look at, and anybody I've ever spoken to about this, this is the like million-dollar hard problem to solve, is getting the monitoring in place so that when you do those types of things, you know how to fix those problems and know what impact it actually had on your solution. Like, if I take down the caching tier on my application, what happens? You know, and how does that bubble up, you know, right, to me? Those are sort of the interesting questions that you end up being directed towards. And everybody has their own solution for that kind of thing. But whether it's using a variety of monitoring tools like Application Insights and Log Analytics, or whether it's using, you know, third-party tools or things like that to monitor, like something like Rancher to monitor a Kubernetes cluster, it really depends on the direction you want to go as an organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, right, the monitoring is a very critical part, especially when you're architecting an Azure solution. You have to make sure that monitoring is in place and we have the right kind of monitoring and the right visibility. I think that's the key. That was a great tip, right? So on that note, I know your blog, Big Mac, and I just realized that you have changed the URL. It's now called Well Documented Node.
Yeah. Right?
So you provide amazing updates, you provide tips, and also, other useful information about Azure in your blog. But let's say if somebody comes to you and asks for advice for new Azure architects, so somebody who's just new into the Azure space, what would be your advice to them?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And, you know, one of the things that I find helped me the most, so if I look back at my background, one of the other elements of my background was I was actually a professor for about 5 years.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, I taught an intro to web application development as an adjunct professor, which if you ever really want to put your dev skills to test, teach an intro course. You will learn debugging skills like nobody else. I mean, because you have no idea what people can break when they're learning. And it's awesome. It's a great experience. That's what should happen. But I think one of the skills I got from that time, I'm really thankful for that time as a professor, because one of the things that really I got, and it helped me a lot, and it's helped me through the years as a solution architect, is learning how to boil down concepts and technologies and explain them in a way that makes sense. Because everybody comes from different backgrounds and everything else. And, you know, seeing things through the lens of somebody else and having that level of empathy to relay information in a way that they understand, it really has, so it has a couple of benefits as a cloud solution architect. The first is it helps build a rapport. It helps them feel more comfortable to ask questions when you're able to answer and boil things down in a way that they can get, if they're new to this kind of stuff. And it also helps in the sense that it really empowers you also to sort of give and relay information, and also empowers you to sort of not know the answer. Because I had a colleague when I first started at Microsoft that used to tell me, you know, the first time, you absolutely are within your rights to say, I don't know the answer to that, the first time you get asked the question. You're not within your rights the second time, is what they used to say. So make sure you go out and learn it. And, you know, it's funny because I point to my wife a lot as thankful on this, because over the years, there are times where I'm putting together like a chalk talk or a presentation or something to a customer. And I will literally, my wife is amazing and tolerates me doing this, running this stuff by her. And saying, like, this is how I would explain this. And the reason I say that is my wife has zero technical background at all. And so it's one of those, like, over the years, she's told me, if I can get it, that means probably you're in a good place. Because I've never learned it before. I don't understand this stuff. So it was literally like, I can tell you, there was last year me literally sitting down and explaining Kubernetes to somebody with no tech background. How does that make sense? And it's forced me to focus on how I can learn and relay information better, and ultimately it helps the end customer. So if I wanted to point to that thing of how do you, if you're a new architect, what I'd say is really learn how to help explain things to people in a way that makes sense, because it'll help you understand and it helps them understand.
Awesome. That's something that I'm very passionate about as well, personally. To break down the complex and make it simplified to anyone, I mean, be it customers or even internal Microsoft, right? For some reason, I feel like the world is thriving today on complexity. It feels like the more complex you sound, it's going to make you look smarter. But at the end of the day, if we can break it down and to your point, it makes the customer feel more at ease, and they can also come back to you and say, hey, okay, now that I know this works, the conversation gets a little more deeper and it becomes more realistic. And you've been very lucky to have a wife who's patient enough to listen to you. And on this, I think that's a good alpha beta test before we go on to the production scenario.
Exactly. She's actually the one who came up with the name for the blog. She tells people regularly, I'm a well-documented nerd. It is a great, and you're absolutely right. I see it a lot in that people think that making it sound complex makes you smarter. And to me, there is no better feeling than looking around a room and seeing the click where everybody around the room just gets it, and they get what you're talking about, and they understand, and then they take the conversation to that next level. And there's just no better feeling in the world than that. Like, I can remember as a professor standing in front of a room, and you'd see like a half a dozen light bulbs just go off, and it's awesome.
Right. And I think it also adds, right, to be your background being, you've taught to students. So I think that also helps you in your current role, because you sort of, you know, you put yourself in that shoes to break it down, and the debugging part as well. That's invaluable. and I absolutely agree.
Yeah. So, and the thing I would say to people, because I have given that advice before, and the response I usually get is, yeah, but not everybody can be a professor. Well, the first thing I would say to you is, if you ever want to be the opportunity, there are a lot of community colleges and stuff out there that are hungry for adjuncts, and they would love to have you. Mm-hmm. Number one. But number two, part of how I started before that was, mm-hmm, even just find a user group and, yep, ask them, what topic do you need a presenter on? Mm-hmm. And then go learn it and present it to the user group, and repeat this process about a dozen times, you know,
yep,
and you'll be better for it. It'll force you to learn something new, and, you know, hone those skills and exercise that muscle.
Absolutely. Yep. I have to agree with this, because this personally for me, and I also got this advice from another cloud solution actor as well. So this particular advice, as in, you know, you, if you want to learn a new topic, the best way is I go to the user group that I'm a part of in New York, and I say, hey, I'm going to deliver this topic. And because I have a timeline, I have to make sure I learn it. And to your point, we also get to teach it. So I have to be a little better and break down the concepts and make it simplified as well. So that's very, very valuable advice. Thank you for sharing that with us.
No problem.
Ask you that before that, are you still, you said you came from a teaching background, do you still do that apart from the meetup groups, like in colleges, and you manage?
Yeah, so no, I ended up stopping after I came to Microsoft, to be honest. Part of it was travel schedule and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It just became too much to try to manage. It is something that at some point in my career, I will probably go back to, just because there's something empowering about it and something that I really enjoy. But I come from a long line of educators, actually. My whole family is educator. My mom was a fifth grade math teacher. My dad was a college professor and a dean.
Oh, like, nice.
You know, the whole way down. My grandmother taught first grade for 35 years, you know.
Wow.
So it's long line of education in the family, and it's definitely something that's proved helpful over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and something that is kind of fun to do too. So
absolutely, yeah. So it's in your genes.
Yeah, exactly. It is. Absolutely. You know.
You did mention, right? So you, when you work with customers, you come across new technologies, like, if you have to learn Cassandra, et cetera. So what's your routine, or do you have a hack on how do you keep up with all these new technologies and updates?
Yeah, so really, I mean, I do a lot of the same things I know a lot of other people, that a lot of the other esteemed colleagues of mine that you've had on this podcast have mentioned, things like using Feedly, or watching videos, listening to audiobooks, podcasts, et cetera. Do that kind of stuff too. Really, I think the one that I try to do as much as I can, and I've fallen off the horse a little bit, I'll admit, but it's in the same vein as the user groups. I actually use my blog for some of that. So if I have a topic I want to learn, I will figure out a blog post I want to do on it, and then set myself a due date for when I have to have that done by. Mm-hmm. And it forces me, just like you were saying too, I need to go out and learn as much as I can about this, because I actually have to write about this.
Mm-hmm.
I have to deliver it. And I do that as sort of a way of forcing myself to spend time on it, because otherwise competing priorities always come up, right? There's always more emails in the inbox. There's always more meetings, things like that scheduled. So, but if I give myself a deadline and I say, no, I actually have to get this done, I'll do that. Or the other vein that I'll actually do is, you know, we as cloud solution architects are really lucky in the sense that we get to talk to a wide variety of customers, right? So with that, we get to see trends and threads with those customers.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, the topic of high availability, that's not something unique to ISVs. I mean, that's something, whether you're dealing with the smallest state agency or whether you're smallest, like, state, local government, customer or whether you're dealing with a commercial customer, whether you're dealing with a Fortune 500, it doesn't matter. Everybody cares about high availability. Mm-hmm. And so it makes me sort of say, okay, I'm going to write a blog post on common threads and things I'm seeing here. How do I help people? I can sort of come at it from that perspective, and that forces me to see things a little differently. And it challenges me to find new solutions and new technologies and stuff like that. So I like doing those types of things to myself.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
As far as finding new ways to do things. And it forces me to learn, which at the end of the day is what matters. You know, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if anybody asked me the question, how would I sort of keep up with new up-to-date technology? I would say I read your blog. Especially, I know you had a series which says Weekly Links.
Yeah.
Where you sort of condense all the updates that's happening and you make it relatable and you sort of make it in a very, very crisp manner. I used to love those, you know, the weekly links. So that's how I would keep myself up to date on new technologies.
To be honest, part of that started in the same vein, to completely transparent with you and your listeners. Like, I started doing the weekly links thing because it made me go look at the Feedly app more that I have running. And okay, if I know I have to pick about a dozen links out of here to put out on a blog post, and that means that I have to go pay more attention to it and I can't push it off, you know? So it forced discipline on myself.
Awesome. I love it. So I would say at least, you know, for the number of people who are listening, I'm definitely going to put, you know, have the link to your blog and the LinkedIn profile in the show notes for today. But apart from that, if people had to get in touch with you, what would be the best way? Is it blog, LinkedIn, or is there another means of communication that you would prefer?
Really, the two best options are LinkedIn is a great one. I do monitor that closely. And Twitter is actually another really good one. My handle's Documented Nerd at Twitter. I like both of those because they really are great conversation style platform. Mm-hmm. And I find it gives an opportunity to engage more. So one of the things I love about blogging, and it sort of calls this out in Twitter and other forms too, is Scott Hanselman had a great blog post a long time ago where he basically called out, like, we each only have so many keystrokes till we die.
Yeah. You know? I love
which,
that.
which is a really funny when I first heard that, I was like, what? And I went back, looked at his point was, and it's a valuable one, is, you know, hey, there's only so much you're going to actually type and do and be able to do with the time you have. So find the best platforms that enable people to not only learn what you've learned, but learn it in a one-to-many format. And I think I love that about social media for a best way to reach me, is the fact that it creates this conversation where, you know, you could reach out to me and I will absolutely respond and I'm happy to do so. But if I don't know the answer and someone else on Twitter does, you're going to get the benefit of that too. You know, and I just find that such a valuable exchange. You know, so those are really the two best ways.
Awesome. Yep. And I absolutely love the video you talked about with Scott. And, you know, that's funny. Actually, the reason that I started blogging and making videos is the same reason as well. I saw it like, oh, wow. You only have a limited number of strokes. You can't just keep wasting it on email. If there's a repeated email, go ahead, type a blog post, point somebody to that email. Don't rewrite it. That is like a light bulb moment for me.
No, I love it. He had the recent video, I think it was like a careers video Scott Hanselman did. And the great quote I love was, no, don't put it in the email. Emails are where keystrokes go to die. Like,
that, exactly.
It's like, that's fantastic. I love that. Those are the best ways to reach me. And I'm happy to help anybody. You know, I find as much, and similar to how I talked about the education space, you know, as much as when people ask questions, they learn, I find everyone learns, including myself. So I would jump at the chance to talk to any of your listeners. So that's great. Thank you.
Awesome, Kevin. Thank you so much for being on the show. Really, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
No, thank you so much, Anand. I mean, I like I said, I've been listening to the podcast. This is all great stuff. So I'm thrilled to have the opportunity.
Awesome. Thank you.